Welcome to MedEvidence, where we help you navigate the truth behind medical research with unbiased, evidence-proven facts, powered by Encore Research Group and hosted by cardiologist and top medical researcher, Dr. Michael Corrin.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Corrin, and we are here today with Dr. Alpa Patel, and we're talking about palliative care. And in our first session, we talked about just some of the general terms that are related to palliative care and some of the general concepts that physicians deal with and think about when they make recommendations for palliative care, and also the things that the families need to consider. So we have a unique situation with Dr. Patel because not only is she a very experienced internist, but she's also somebody that has been dealing with decision-making regarding palliative care with regard to her father. And that gets into this concept of how physicians think when they're making recommendations for other patients and how that plays out when they're dealing with their own family members. Mm-hmm. And so there's some interesting tensions and emotions that go into that concept. Yes. And it's also interesting because as a physician in the family is looking to you to help them make some of those determinations and what is the best course of action. So if it's okay, and again, we really appreciate you sharing these personal, this personal information with us. Just walk us through what happened with your dad. Tell us a little bit about him. Tell us how he got his diagnosis and how that played out, and then where you eventually got to the point where you considered palliative care.
Sure. So my father's 85. He's had a lot of chronic health problems for a number of years now, probably.
What kind of things has he dealt with?
Maybe about 15 years ago, he had heart bypass. He's developed some chronic kidney issues since then. Back in the 60s, he actually had a very unusual surgery. He had a partial gastrectomy where they removed part of his stomach and have hooked up his stomach to the jejunum, partially to the duodenum, because he had a bleeding peptic ulcer when he lived in Africa back in the 60s. So the doctor that operated on him literally saved his life. They said this was the first surgery he'd done of this kind, or he would have died. So his stomach anatomy is very unusual and has had severe dumping syndrome for years as a result of that. Very brittle, uncontrolled diabetes. And it's a surprise he's actually made it to 85. None of his siblings have lived past 65. Wow. So everyone maybe says maybe it's because he has a doctor in the house, but I don't know. I don't take credit for it.
I'm sure he had some role.
Yeah. So anyway, he about 4 years ago got diagnosed with oral cancer, which was detected by his dentist. He had a lesion that they biopsied. He had squamous cell carcinoma. At that time, even because of his poor health and uncontrolled diabetes, he really wasn't a candidate for aggressive surgery. I mean, the physicians would have done it, but we didn't want that because it would have required grafts, removing part of his mandible, feeding tubes, which his stomach anatomy really was so unusual that he didn't feel comfortable, neither did we with that. So we opted for seeing multiple physicians. We kept getting one opinion after another because all the surgical options given to us, we were like, he doesn't want to do this. I finally made him an appointment at the Mayo Clinic, and one of the doctors there recommended CO2 laser surgery where they just resurfaced that area. And he even told us it wasn't probably curative then, that this could recur. We didn't know how long this would last. He didn't have any spread to the lymph nodes at the time, so that was a good prognosis.
When he was diagnosed, did they give you a sense for what his expected life would be without treatment?
At that time, they really didn't. They said it was slow growing because maybe 3 years prior to that, he was diagnosed with lichen planus, which was probably a precursor to this, and it took 3 years in between that to developing squamous cell carcinoma. Mm-hmm. They did say that his quality of life would probably be better with this type of surgery than all the aggressive options we were given
with the CO2 laser. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he did quite well with that. He had maybe a 2-3 month course where it was difficult to eat.
So that's interesting. Sorry to interrupt you, but so that's the difference between curative surgery and palliative surgery.
Correct.
So, which is a concept for the for people who are listening in that they may not be familiar with, is that sometimes we go to completely cure the problem and get rid of the cancer, mm-hmm. but other times we're just managing it, mm-hmm. knowing that we're not getting rid of it completely, but we're trying to prolong the life of somebody through a, quote, palliative surgical approach, and hopefully not disrupting the patient's comfort in any major way.
And it was really after seeing a third or fourth surgeon that we were even really given this option, because we just weren't backing down at that point of he's just not going to go through this aggressive surgery. There has to be other options. So he did quite well for about 3.5 years.
Did you attend all those meetings with him with the different physicians?
Yes.
So how'd that go?
I think it went well. I think everybody always looks for a curative intent when it comes to cancer. They kept telling us, well, this will come back, this will come back. And we knew that, but we didn't know how quickly is it going to come back and the quality of life he would have had with the aggressive surgery. In fact, honestly, I don't think he would have survived the type of aggressive surgeries they were suggesting to us with his health status. And I kept telling my dad, let's just not do any of this. He was willing to because he was getting desperate at this point that I need to do something. But I just kept looking for more options because the options given to him didn't sound appropriate to me.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that dynamic. So was he... When you went into that room, obviously having a physician there is going to change the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there may be the sense that ultimately you should be the decision maker because you have the most knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, of course, the patient is the ultimate decision maker. So I'm interested in that. But the other thing I'm interested in was he a person that said, I just want to live as long as possible and I'll do anything? Or was he focused on the comfort more in these conversations?
So he's always been a person, even now when he's in full-time hospice, he keeps telling us, I don't know why they're coming to the house. I don't need this. I'm going to be around forever. So he always thinks, you know, mortality isn't there. And that's where we also are trying to get some help in him understanding that. But he wanted to be able to eat normally. Mm-hmm. That's been something that's been a big priority for him mm-hmm. is nutrition and understanding how these procedures would have affected that made him rethink what he really wanted to do.
Right. So, yeah, the old question, do we live to eat or do we eat to live?
Yeah. And he's lived to eat most of his life, so.
Which is important.
Yeah, it is.
These are actually, I think, the key parts of making good decisions is to know what drives people, what gives them comfort and solace.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have some patients that they just want to live as long as possible. That's their feeling. Others say that it's all about quality.
Yeah, and he told us if I can't eat the normal foods that I like to eat, I don't know what the point of living is for me. However, he does want a longevity of life, but he didn't want to give up those things. So I kind of had to have a conversation with him too about what his quality of life would be with an aggressive surgery. Maybe the cancer would be cured, but he would have had significant facial deformities, a mandible that was removed, grafts taken from his thigh, other areas, part of the muscle taken from his temple. He wouldn't have even looked the same. And he said, I can't look in the mirror at myself every day and see that. I don't want to do that.
During this process, when they're recommending these very aggressive measures,
mm-hmm.
did they give you a sense for what life expectancy would be one way versus the other?
I think they said that the life expectancy would have had a curative intent if he had this aggressive surgery over 5 years. But he was already 81 at that time with multiple chronic problems. So my whole goal was, I want you to enjoy life. I want you to be able to do the things you're able to do and not just be spending every day in the hospital and going to doctor's offices and running around getting tons of medical care when we could do things that could still let you eat, let you be in more comfort. Maybe your longevity might be decreased by a couple of years, but you'd live a better life.
Gotcha. You know? Interesting. So keep on going. So did you opt for the CO2 laser treatment?
Yes, we did. We did that in December of 2019. In the summer of 22, he started noticing that he was having difficulty with chewing on that side and pain with chewing. So he saw his dentist again, and they had said that they thought it was just some teeth that were decayed that needed to be removed. However, the pain became to the point where he was having significant trismus. And what I mean by trismus is almost like locked jaw. He couldn't open his mouth. At that point, they noticed he had a lesion inside his cheek that was probably initially the size of a dime. That was biopsied and found that he had a recurrence of the cancer. It actually pretty aggressively increased to the size of almost a quarter over just a couple of months. But he was recovering during this time from the teeth extractions, and we didn't seek any other treatment until he recovered from that. But again, we went back to the same surgeon that did the CO2 laser. And this time, even him offered us this aggressive surgery. And I was like, I can't believe this, that we came to you for a less aggressive option 3 years ago. And he told us that there really wasn't a lot more at his age apart from this that he could do as a surgeon. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned palliative care to us from the beginning.
So that was the first time you considered a palliative care approach.
Correct. I think his initial surgery was probably palliative too, because it wasn't a cure at that point.
And that's the difference between palliative surgery and palliative care. So just make that clear.
So we asked if there was a simple surgery he could do again, and he said not a second time, that this was too large, too aggressive for him to do what he did initially. Mm-hmm. But he suggested for us to see the palliative care department, and he suggested palliative radiation. Mm-hmm. Because in order for him to have the full course of radiation, which would have been 5 days a week, 7 days, 7 days a week, 5 days a week for 7 weeks, he would have had to have had a feeding tube. And my dad, very from the get-go, has always told us he never wanted a feeding tube with his stomach anatomy.
Sure.
And that would not be pleasure to him. He said he's not going to be satisfied with us giving him food that way.
So that's a great point. Yeah. So I'm getting to know your dad as you talk about him. And obviously, food was a huge part of his life.
It was.
And that was a part of his life he didn't want to give up.
Right.
And this is the concept of cure versus comfort again.
Right.
That for him, eating was comfort.
Correct. And eating was pleasure. This was probably one of the few things that was enjoyable still in life to him, was cooking, feeding others, and enjoying the meals. So he asked, what can you do to help get my mouth open? Mm. I can't open my mouth more than to get a straw in, and this is very frustrating to me. So what they suggested was for us to see the radiation oncology department at Mayo only for palliative radiation, which included like just 4 doses of radiation. They were given twice a day over a 2-day period. That was done right before Christmas. He did not tolerate that well at all. He had severe pain, couldn't even keep down water. He ended up in the hospital getting IV fluids. And even when he got home, it took 3 weeks to get better from it, to the point where he could just eat liquids. And when we went back to the oncologist in January, we were going to tell them that we don't want this treatment anymore. We just want to enroll in comfort hospice care.
Interesting. So at that transition point, you went from palliative approaches that were dealing with the disease, starting with the laser treatments and then radiation in order to improve function, but not trying to cure the disease.
Correct.
And then you transitioned from that to a complete palliative care model where it was just all about comfort.
Well, that's what we were expecting out of the visit. So when we went back to his follow-up in January, the radiation oncologist said that even that little bit of radiation had made a huge difference in the tumor. The tumor had shrunk by almost 50%.
Wow.
And that if my dad just tolerated one more course of this, he thinks he could get this a lot better, that he could probably eat a lot more, he would have less pain, and it could prevent rupture. One of the things we worried about was that his tumor could have ruptured through his cheek.
Yikes.
So even as frail and as horrible as my dad was feeling, he heard all that and he said, let's do it. Let's sign up for another round. And my mom and I were looking at him like, are you really sure you want to do this? It's been a horrible month. You've been in and out of the hospital. We didn't think you're even going to make it. And he said, if it's helped this much, I'm going to tough it out and do another round.
We're going to hold that thought for a second and we're going to get back to it in our next session where we are going down the road. It looks like we're going towards palliative care. And then all of a sudden, there's an unexpected success that
changes
our mind frame.
But again, it is palliative radiation.
And we'll get to that in our next session.
Okay.
Thanks for joining the MedEvidence podcast. To learn more, head over to medevidence.info or subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform.